This is Crossroads, the Get Religion podcast.
Well, there was a statement released by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and in it, Los Angeles Archbishop Jose Gomez wrote in part, "I must point out that our new president has pledged to pursue certain policies that would advance moral evils and threaten human life and dignity, most seriously in the areas of abortion, contraception, marriage, and gender. Of deep concern is the liberty of the church and the freedom of believers to live according to their consciences." That was the statement. The Vatican halted its release. Why and how will it be covered in the media? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
What was in this statement by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops that made Rome want to pull it, or at least delay its release?
Well, yeah, it's pretty complicated, as things often are in Rome. I think we don't have any press coverage of this yet, and it'll be interesting to see if we get significant press coverage of this little standoff. It appears, here's the sequence, and I'm relying here on the reporting of a very new, interesting Catholic publication called The Pillar. And this is a newsroom led by two people who just left EWTN and kind of the world of conservative Catholic media. And I think they're still viewed as a conservative Catholic source, but with a new degree of independence. They've only been in existence now for like a week and a half, 2 weeks, and they broke the story of the day, which was the Vatican shutting down this statement, or at least briefly shutting it down. For what reason? Well, it appears maybe the Pope wanted his letter, his statement to Biden to come out first. And at that point, you have to look at the statement from the Pope, which is short, and I can read the key paragraph here, and you tell me if you have a history of reading papal statements of this kind. Tell me what's missing from this statement. At a time when the grave crises facing our human family call for farsighted and united responses, I pray that your decisions will be guided by a concern for building a society marked by authentic justice and freedom, together with unfailing respect for the rights and dignity of every person, especially the poor, the vulnerable, and those who have no voice. What strikes you as missing from that statement?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to be gracious and interpret those who have no voice as perhaps the unborn. And maybe that's what Francis meant, but you never can tell with Francis.
Well, the main thing is that it's very rare, even for statements from Pope Francis, it's very rare for him to make that sort of statement and explicitly not say the sanctity of all human life from conception to natural death, or those that have no voice, especially the unborn. You normally, in this equation, would have heard some sort of explicit reference to the sanctity of human life, which for Roman Catholics opens a door into many different issues. People talk all the time about, well, these conservatives are obsessed with abortion. The press doesn't seem to understand that doctrines on the sanctity of human life is how Catholics get to their beliefs about, well, obviously the death penalty, but also immigration, social justice, racism, poverty, all of those things, the environment. All of that would fall under the area of the sanctity of human life. So to see this kind of an equation from the Pope come out and not have a nod that cannot be misinterpreted, a nod, a gentle nod, but one that it's very clear why it's there. And like you said, you can be generous and say, well, the voiceless refers to da-da-da-da-da. But this is not normal papal language. And I would stress even from Francis in many cases. Now, what's fascinating is then when you turn to the statement from the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference, you immediately have to start off by saying, well, who is speaking? And that gets us into another interesting bit of politics, which it will be interesting to see if the press picks up on. The Pillar is reporting that this statement was pulled at the request of several different cardinals and other bishops, including among them Cardinal Joseph Tobin of Newark and Cardinal Blaise Kupak of Chicago. Kupich, I can never pronounce that name. I'm going to have to learn that name. It's one of those names I've struggled to through the years to get right. But anyway, the very powerful Cardinal of Chicago. And one of the things that's interesting about this, these are both cardinals that are very much aligned with Francis. The problem for some people in the American hierarchy, they are also cardinals who were very much aligned with former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. And as such, they were a part of that body of people in the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference who didn't want to stop liberal Catholics from being able to receive Holy Communion and proceed publicly as Catholics. Why would that be important right now? That's the elephant or the donkey in the living room in this case. We have in Joe Biden someone who literally wears his Catholicism on his wrist or his pocket, wherever he's decided to put his rosary at any given point in time. Very publicly a Catholic, yet someone who with every single year moves further and further and further away from agreement with Catholic social doctrines on some of the more controversial issues, all of which comes up in the letter that the, let's just say, the pro-Biden, the pro-Democrat, that's too partisan, the more liberal half of the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference wanted this statement pulled, and it has lengthy sections on abortion. It has lengthy sections on Biden and abortion, and it comes down to an amazing set of paragraphs, one of which begins with, working with President Biden will be unique, however, as he is our first president in 60 years to profess the Catholic faith. Now, once again, there's that very interesting word, profess. In a time of growing and aggressive secularism in American culture, when religious believers face many challenges, it will be refreshing to engage with a president who clearly understands in a deep and personal way the importance of religious faith and institutions. Mr. Biden's piety and personal story, his moving witness to how his faith has brought him solace in times of darkness and tragedy, his longstanding commitment to the gospel's priority for the poor, all of this I find hopeful and inspiring. What struck me, once again in there, nowhere was there a reference to the strength given to him by his Catholic faith. We're left with profess his faith. Then, the very next sentence, at the same time, as pastors and the nation's bishops, we are given the duty of proclaiming the gospel in all of its truth and power. In season and out of season, even when that teaching is inconvenient, or when the gospel's truths run contrary to the directions of wider society and culture. So I must point out to our new president that he has pledged to pursue certain policies that would advance moral evils and threaten human life and dignity, most seriously in the area of abortion, contraception, marriage, and gender. Of deep concern is the liberty of the church and the freedom of believers to live according to their consciences. I had to read all that because you don't understand this conflict if you don't know how explicit they were. And that's not all they said. They later came out and said again, for the nation's bishops, the continued injustice of abortion remains the preeminent priority. Preeminence does not mean only, we have deep concerns about, etc. But where's that controversial language that has split the U.S. bishops on many occasions? The word preeminent priority is abortion. In other words, these various concerns of the church are not all morally equal. They're all morally important. They are doctrines. They are teachings. But abortion, it once again gets pushed to the head of the list. So you can see why this letter was so troubling to the cardinals, including the Cardinal of Washington, D.C., Cardinal Gregory, who want to finesse this relationship with Biden. And at this point, you would have to say this was a strong suggestion that the Vatican wants to finesse this relationship in a similar matter. And that's going to be a real flashpoint between what I think we can honestly now say are the two different Catholic media in America, one of which the left is backed by the press, the mainstream press, and then the two different camps of Catholics in America on social doctrines concerning family, morality, etc. Once again, a long answer, but I felt you needed to hear that to understand why this should be a big story. I'm not going to be surprised at all if we see little or no coverage of this in the mainstream press in the next 2 days.
You said that you would expect little media coverage of this statement and its kind of half release through the rest of the week. Why is that?
I don't think it's convenient for the press to want to get into a discussion of Joe Biden after an event, the inauguration, that was drenched in religious references, some of them explicitly Catholic, and included a Jesuit priest that Biden is personally extremely close with. I think the next 2 days will be spent celebrating how religious faith was such a healthy part of these events. And there's so much a part of who Biden is and how he views America. And he has come to heal America's soul. Bringing up a dispute between Rome and the U.S. Catholic bishops linked to the critical issue of whether Biden should be receiving communion, doesn't that strike you as a bit of a downer in the midst of this celebratory, Trump is gone, it's time to you know, for the religious left to be happy, we're all going to get back to saying nice things about each other when it comes to religion. It's also interesting, I don't think people want to talk that much about the split within American Catholicism and in the Catholic media and among the bishops, and they certainly don't want to have to deal with the fact that at the heart of the most contentious issue between Catholic bishops, right at the middle of that issue, stands Theodore McCarrick. And it's like they want to keep the McCarrick policy on liberal Catholic politicians and communion. But do you think they want to like bring up the fact that it's his policy and that more than any other person, he was kind of responsible for it? I don't see the major media wanting to go there and pull that ghost back out of his exile, to mix a metaphor there.
So where should reporters, if they're going to report on this, where should they go next on this story?
Well, they can just deal with the document. This is one of those cases where even if nobody returns your calls, and by the way, the journalists at the Pillar are definitely getting phone calls returned. In fact, they published a story yesterday before all this broke that really, looking at it now, it leaves me with the impression that they knew what was coming. I mean, the headline on it was something like, Joe Biden and the U.S. Catholic bishops, this can't end well. I mean, they knew that, you know, the tensions were coming. I think the other question that the press needs to be asking is, why is Francis so comfortable with Biden? Now, it helps, of course, that Biden was vice president for 8 years and was kind of the unofficial Catholic ambassador of the Democratic left or the mainstream Democrats to Rome. So he's very well known in Rome. Biden has been around forever. I also think it's crucial that all of Biden's closest ties with Catholicism, most of them are with big liberal urban cities or with Jesuits or both. And never forget that Francis is the first Jesuit pope. There was a time, like when John F. Kennedy was running for president, that conservatives in America would talk openly about, oh, the Jesuits are going to take over. This will be a horrible thing for America. And frankly, a lot of anti-Catholic people used to fly the flag of Jesuits and say, this is the big, bad, worst part of the Catholic Church that loves to take power and control politicians. The irony is that today it's primarily conservative Catholics in America who are scared of the Jesuits and tend to see a Jesuit conspiracy hiding behind every door. So watch for Biden and the Jesuits, watch for Biden and the Pope, and at the same time, remember that Rome is in Europe. And Francis tends to see the world through European eyes. We can talk about him being from South America, but I mean, he's, you know, the son of immigrants from Italy. He's really more European than he is anything else. And he seems to see the world through the European lens of Rome. And when you look at this Biden story through that lens, the first thing you see is he's not Trump. And the whole style of Trump, frankly, from many people's perspective, including the Pope's, the meanness of Trump, that just was a problem that this Pope could not get past. Then you look at the issues that matter so fiercely to this Pope, and that would be immigration. At the same time, you have Rome is involved in such careful, tense, fraught negotiations with China on just about everything. Did they like Trump's approach to China, or did they like Biden's approach to China? Even though they can talk about human rights in China all they want, the simple fact is that Biden is going to be more friendly with China than Trump was. And then also, as Europeans, the Pope is in a region where everyone is terrified right now, not only of anti-immigration and of racism linked to immigration, they're terrified of loud, powerful, even violent nationalism and populism. Populism is a bad word for sophisticated Europeans when they look at the European landscape. Well, what was Trump? Trump was the person who did everything but have the word populism tattooed on his forehead, even if he never did anything about it in terms of economics or didn't do much about it in terms of economics. So it's safe to say that Francis had no desire to walk into a room containing Donald Trump, and he now has every desire to walk into a room in which Biden will be standing there surrounded by all of his friends who are Jesuits. So that level of comfort has to be a big part of this story.
As to the release of the document, maybe I have my chronology wrong. Was it actually released? And if it was not released, if the Vatican actually prevented the release, should reporters be asking, then how did the pillar get it?
Well, okay, here's the deal. This was one of those situations where the document was probably already out, but it was clearly embargoed. So once the Pope got his message out, I think at that point everybody says, hey, everybody already has this document. We may as well let them post it, you know, put it up and go on, because the Pope's going to get the bigger headline anyway, because what he's saying is friendly to Joe Biden. This is just there go, that conservative cardinal go. Well, uh-oh, there's an interesting issue. Gomez isn't a cardinal. I'll come back to that in a second. There goes that conservative Archbishop Gomez and all those people who want to hit, you know, Biden over the head with abortion and the fact that he performed a same-sex union rite, which is, you know, a serious action demonstrating opposition to church teaching in the form of not just a personal belief, but an action. And Gomez is an interesting figure, too. Los Angeles is the largest diocese in America. I mean, used to be Chicago. People might think New York. The biggest diocese far and away is Los Angeles. Gomez is the Archbishop of Los Angeles. The previous Archbishop was a cardinal. You have other cardinals. This is normally a red hat city. Why doesn't Gomez have a red hat? Especially when you consider that if you look at statistics, the future of the church in America is Hispanics. There, I mean, you would think that a pope from Latin America would have put a red hat on Gomez's head faster than, you know, you could say jump. He should have done it. Now, people can give lots of reasons, but it is very strange that Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles is not a cardinal. Why isn't he a cardinal? I think you would have to say, and if you go online and look this up and look for all the opinions on this, nobody can say for sure. You'd have to say that Gomez is not a cardinal because he's a doctrinal conservative who opposes the McCarrick Compromise on doctrine, abortion, and communion. I don't think there's any way around that connection in this case. So here we have Gomez squaring off with the Pope again over some of these issues, which also means squaring off with the cardinals of Chicago, Newark, and now Washington.
Finally, with the minute here, Terry, since we are going to have a Roman Catholic president for the next 4 years who opposes the church's teaching and even acts against the church's teaching, do you expect the general story itself of this doctrinal split in American Catholicism to have legs?
It should. I don't think there's going to be any way to avoid it. I'm expecting lots and lots of stories about how Biden's actions in social justice, immigration, and all of his compassionate policies are going to be rooted in his Catholicism. And readers can look at that and say, is anybody going to connect the fact that that's the same sanctity of human life doctrine that gets you to euthanasia, abortion, and whatever? The other thing that's a ticking time bomb is Biden's actions on issues related to LGBTQ issues, specifically the Equality Act, and the head-on collision that that could create, unless the Supreme Court gets called in to the rescue pretty quick. Isn't it ironic to talk about conservatives thinking of the U.S. Supreme Court as the place that will defend them? Interesting switch in American life right now. It's going to be interesting to see when these policies begin affecting Catholic charities, which means one more time, the little sisters of the poor are going to be dragged back into the U.S. Supreme Court, where I think they're going to win, at which point we will find out whether Biden has the courage to compromise on these issues. He's famous for negotiating and compromising and trying to find middle ground. Will he have the courage to work with Congress and ultimately the court and find some compromises on these issues?
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a production of Get Religion, part of the First Amendment Projects at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. If you appreciate this podcast, please make a secure, online, tax-deductible donation at getreligion.org.